You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout. Hello and welcome to episode 136 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm very glad this morning to be joined by Megan. Good morning, Megan.
Morning.
Thanks so much for coming on. We are here to chat. We're here to chat about your son, Oakley, who has Hirschsprungs. An interesting story that I can't wait to delve into. Lots of little subjects. I know we were just talking a little bit off air. About lots of bits and pieces that have happened in his life so far. It's very his short life so far because he's not very old at all. But yeah, really, really interested to delve into those. But I'll hand over to you. So would you like to take us back to, I guess, the beginning?
Well, when Oakley was born in November 2024, I had him via C-section because I had gestational diabetes. And when we went for my 38-week scan, the rest of his body was measuring 38 weeks, bang on, but his stomach was measuring 42 weeks and 3 days. And they told me, oh, we'll have to get him out as soon as possible because that's due to gestational diabetes. Didn't think anything of it, no problem. They tried to induce me, it didn't work. And then they took me down it was technically classed as an emergency, but I was already booked in on Tuesday, the 26th of November. And they classed it as an emergency because the induction failed. So we had him, C-section went great, back to the room, family came in, but he wouldn't feed at all. He had no interest in the breast. He had no interest in a bottle. He was bright-eyed, but just like any newborn looking about. And I kept saying to my midwives, he won't feed. He won't feed. We'll make him feed. So I said, well, I want to breastfeed. I don't want to give him a bottle. Oh, well, you're going to have to. So they fetched bottles and we're force-feeding him. Effectively, and he was throwing every single mortal bit of it back up every time, and then he'd cry because he was hungry, so he'd try again. And he was actually having a lot of wet nappies, but there was no stool. And then so I had him around 3:30 on the Tuesday, and they sent me home at 5:00 on the Wednesday, which I thought was a bit that's too soon after a C-section for me, but they needed the room. So we went home, and by the time we got home, every time I tried to feed him, it became yellow, the sick, with a funny smell. And I was like, no, this isn't right. This didn't happen with my first, so I don't know what it is. Still no poo. But I didn't even think anything of that. And then the community midwife came at 8:00 in the morning, took one look at him and said, get him back to hospital right now. There's something not right. So we went back up to the hospital and they're like, well, he's totally fine. I says, well, he isn't fine because he's not feeding. He's now throwing up green sick, which can't be very good. That's not just stomach acid. And they give him an enema. And me and my partner, Andrew, literally watched him in the little crib blow up. And we thought he was going to burst. He was just getting bigger. And he was like the size of a balloon. It was huge. And Andrew rushed off to the desk. And they were like, we don't know what it is. We don't know what it is. Took him away, cannulated him, put an NG tube in. Well, as soon as they put the NG tube in, all this green stuff started flowing right out of it. And we were like, what is going on? I don't understand. And they rushed him back to Skaboo and for Newcastle Hospital. because that was the closest specialist hospital to us, even though it's like 70 miles away. And the nurse in Skibo, I will never forget it. She looked at me and she put a hand on my shoulder and she said, "If he makes it off the ambulance, he'll go straight into theatre, and we don't know what's wrong." And I was like, "Oh." So they came in with the incubator and everything from Newcastle, and the two people on the ambulance were amazing. They explained everything to us that, they weren't using all the machines on it. It was just to keep him warm and to measure his oxygen and stuff like that. There was no big machines on, no medication going into him, anything. And they'd asked Carlisle that, "Have you took an X-ray?" "Oh no." So they got him back out, put him in the thing, did a portable X-ray, and you could see that his bowel was impacted. It was humongous. And they still said to me, "Oh, well, we don't know what that is." And I'm like, "Well, neither do I. I'm not a doctor." So we got blue lighted all the way to Newcastle. And luckily, I got there before anybody else. So Andrew and my family were following behind, but there'd been a crash on the A69. So they nearly got stuck in that. So I got there, we got rushed down straight to the room, and the doctor came straight in, and luckily Andrew was only a minute or two behind. And he was like, "Please, can you calm down?" And I was like, "No, you're gonna take him to theatre." And they were like, "No, we're not. We're going for an X-ray and then we're gonna give him a washout." And I'm thinking, "How do you wash a baby out?" I didn't understand. So we went off to X-ray. They said it hasn't changed, it's got a massive impaction. We'll wash him out. And there was nine balls on the bed round him of stuff that just kept coming out and coming out. But as they were doing it, you could see him, the relief, and his stomach going down, and he completely settled. And I was like, "Oh, wow, I don't understand." So they never said anything to us about what it could be or anything, because this was like 1 o'clock in the morning by this point. That's how long it took them to get any answers at Carlisle or anything. And when they came to us the next morning, he'd had a really settled night. He'd slept all night, but he hadn't really slept either, right from being born to going back to the hospital. So he'll have been tired. They said, "Have you ever heard of Hirschsprung's disease?" And I was like, "Never. We think that's what it is. He's going to have a biopsy." And I was like, "How do you do that?" "Well, we go in through the bum, take tissue, and send it off. But he can't have it until he can go 24 hours without a washout." And I was like, "Right, okay." She was like, "So we don't know how long that'll take. It might be it might take 2 weeks, it might take 3 weeks, it might take 2 days. We don't know because we can't let you feed him yet." So that's when they told us, don't Google it, just look on. They told us to go on Alder Hey, or it was the University of Sydney in Australia, which I found really funny after the fact. Because the Sick Children's Hospital of Toronto specialise in it. And I knew that from Bella Brave.
Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
After I'd, you know, you realise, oh, that person's got it, or, you know, oh, that, you know, looking about and stuff. So, it took him 7 days to be able to go the 24 hours. And I wasn't allowed to feed him. So we got to the hospital on the Thursday. I wasn't allowed to feed him till the Sunday. So he was nil by mouth that whole time. And I was like, I'm never going to be able to feed him myself. You know, will he even take a bottle? What will happen? But thank God he flew. He fed straight away off me, and that was it. He was great. And I actually think the feeding him helped him go that bit longer and get to the 24-hour mark. And then it took 6 days for his results to come back. And they were like, yes, he's got Hirschsprung's disease. We don't know the extent of it. We don't know what it'll entail, but he needs an operation. We're doing it tomorrow. And I was like, oh, what? You know, like, my baby, you can't operate on my tiny baby. But in the back of my head, you know, it's going to save him. So I can't say no. Just got to put your big girl pants on and be brave. So the next day, he was nil by mouth from 10 o'clock because he was in at 2. And they come in and his surgeon is an angel on earth to us. And when we were in the room and we were allowed to ask him questions and everything, my daughter Bailey, who was 11 at the time, asked him more questions than any of us did. And there was me, Oakley's dad, grandparents, auntie, all in the room. And he sat with her and told her more in not a shortened version, but a way that she would explain, which that in turn helped me just listening to that. And, you know, he said he might come out with a stoma. He might come out cut from here to here, that way to that way. We just don't know. But you won't know till he comes out. And I was like, right, you know, whatever, just save him. If it's going to save his life, just do it. Yeah. He'll go into intensive care. So he was in theatre for 5.5 hours. Turns out he's got short segment. They took 10 centimetres away, did the pull through, perfect. Tom said he was the star pupil of the day. That's what he'd got. And then he went over to intensive care. We were allowed to see him straight away. And his nurse that was looking after him really laughed because he'd not woke up, like, on the move from recovery to... And as soon as I went in, I was like, hiya, darling. And he went, looked me right in the eye and then shut his eyes again and went back to sleep. And I was like, oh. But obviously you're not allowed to stay with them in case you fall asleep. So I was like, sat on the chair, like trying to keep my eyes off. I was like, I don't want to leave him. And the nurse, she called Eve and she came over and she patted me on the shoulder and she was like, go and get some rest because you're no use to him sitting there falling asleep. And he was in there he did 2 nights, but it was more because, or how they told us, it was ITU are more trained on giving morphine. And there's a very fine line between too little, too much and perfect. Whereas the ward staff, they've got that many children to look after. They're like, no, it's one to two in intensive care. We don't have the capacity to monitor him as, I don't know what the word is, as hard. And we went back to the ward, and I did actually sleep for 8 hours. And I think it was just sheer exhaustion. It had been 2 weeks of I had people in the day helping, but then at night time it was just me and him, and he was uncomfortable and he'd cry when I like he got too full, and it was really, really hard. And then he came back to the ward, but it did take him 36 hours to poo, which that was kind of worrying me because you're not to feed them until they've had the first bowel movement. But after the first one, when they tell you need nappies and wipes, well, not wipes, cotton, they wouldn't let me use any wipes. And I realise now why, because when we got home and I started using wipes, he got a sore bum. Warm water and cotton pads that you do. It was every 10 minutes for weeks. And it was like, oh my God. Is this going to be forever? And I made a comment to his surgeon at one of his checkups. I was like, God, these nappies should come on prescription. He was like, well, actually, you can get them on prescription, but they're not very good. And I was like, oh. He was like, so just scan the barcode in the Pampers and you'll get a one free every four packets. I was like, all right, okay. And then we were finally allowed home on the 18th of December for Christmas. We had to go. We did a checkup on the 22nd, so it was 4 days later. We had to go back and get him checked over. Had, all my Christmases came at once because that was all we wanted. We just wanted to be home for Christmas. And in the first couple of days of being in hospital, when they were talking about he's got to have an operation, if this is what it is, he's got to have this. They said if he has an operation, he won't be home for Christmas. And we were like, oh. Heartbroken. But we made it home. And then the whole time, actually, after about a week of being at home, he was very uncomfortable lying flat. And I kept saying, no, there's something not right. No, there's something not right. But he wasn't distended. He wasn't being sick. He wasn't having like foul smelling poo or anything. And we went for our checkup on, I think it was the 20th of January, because it was, yeah, it was, because it was Bailey's birthday. That's his oldest sibling's birthday. And we went for an X-ray because as soon as Tom looked at him, he said, is his stomach always like that? And me thinking I knew everything about him was like, yeah, why? And he was like, because it shouldn't be. And I was like, oh, felt like, world's worst mum, because how did I not notice? I knew there was a noise and that he was really uncomfortable and that something mustn't be right, but I didn't realise there was anything wrong with him. And he says, I want to admit you, but I understand that it's you're so far from home and you're still gonna have to wait a week for the contrast X-ray because we can't fit you in. But I would rather you were here. Because I know you're going to end up here before that. And I was like, well, we'll go home, we'll see how we go. Any single change, we will come straight back. Lo and behold, distended, got rushed back over. Well, no, that's a lie. We went up to Carlisle, and this was the first terrible experience. We went up, I told him that we're distended, this is what we found out 3 days ago. Oh, well, we'll just keep him in here and see how he goes. I was like, no, I would really like an X-ray to make sure it's not different or worse. Or, and could you ring Newcastle? Please, can you ring his consultant and tell him, because he knew this was going to happen. We just didn't really know when. So they didn't do anything apart from go and ring Tom. Tom must have said to them, do him an X-ray right now and get him on an ambulance over here. So they cannulated him, NG tube again, took him off for an X-ray. And I said to them, I said, can I see it, please? Why? I says, because I want to know for my own peace of mind how fast it got bad. Because it wasn't all that bad, it was just a little bit bad, is how I'd had it described to me, really. And his whole bowel, there was loops, there was air pockets, there was impactions here, there, and everywhere. And I was like, that is way worse. Like, that is really, really bad. And they must have sent it over to Newcastle. They rang straight back, put him on the first ambulance, get him over here. That's not right. So rushed over, and he was 8 weeks old at this point. It was the 26th of January, and the started the washouts again, nil by mouth. And I was panicking, thinking, this is going to be my life. As it's heart-wrenching to see him the way he is, and this is going to be our life, and that's no life. That's all I kept thinking, like, why did it have to happen to him? Why did it happen to us? This is awful. It's so I really, really hard. I can't find the word, really. And again, Tom straight away came to us, and I call him Tom because that's how he presents himself to us. Like, he'll ring you up and he'll go, "Hey, Megan, it's just Tom." And I'm like, "Oh, hi." He came to us and he was like, "Right, contrast X-ray tomorrow. I've squeezed you in. EUA the day after." Right, that's fine. He was like, "I've spoke to our whole team." And this is when they said, four say stoma, three of us say not. But he was actually, Oakley's going to need a stoma. So he walked us through what that would look like and how it would be reversed in maybe 2 years, give his bowel time to rest and go from there, try the pull through again. Which instantly you're like, oh my God, what? I've never dealt with a stoma. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't care for that. I'm a dairy farmer. I don't do humans. What am I going to do? So when we did the contrast X-ray, we couldn't really find anything apart from a small tightening at the bottom of his sphincter muscle. And he says, "Well, that's not consistent with how bad it got. Definitely stoma." And I'm like, "Oh God, oh, this is scary." So when they took him down to theatre for the EUA, he says, "Again, he'll come out how he comes out. That's it. There's nothing you can do. We can't tell you until we've done it." And we took him down to the theatre, and that's heart-wrenching in itself. Handing your baby over to somebody, and it's like, oh. But we went downstairs to the shop, went outside for some fresh air. Would have been no longer than 10 minutes, and we were walking back in the room. And I shut the door, and then the door opened straight away. And he was like, "Hiya, we're finished." And as he was saying, "We're finished," I went, "What are you doing here? Like, where's Oakley?" And he was like, "We've given Botox." I was like, "Right." He was like, "Come on, he's in recovery, come with me." So we went and seen him, got him out, fetched him back after kind of half an hour-ish. And when they came and said, he says, "We can't find what's wrong. But everything actually looks okay. So we've given him the Botox, but you're staying in for a week so we can make sure it's working." And it worked straight away. As soon as he was back awake and he'd fed, it was like back to the start of, it was every 10 minutes. And touch wood, that's been the last major poolie. And he's thrived since. He's jumped up the centiles. He was on the zero centile on the chart when he was born. I mean, he didn't even fit his skin. The skin on his legs hung, and his arms, they hung. And it was so sad to see. And now he's like 86 centimetres. He's 2 stone. And he's just the happiest, funniest little 19-month-old kid ever. And we have had a couple of instances of like the sickness bug. He suffers really bad with tonsillitis, and that's from me because I had to have mine out. But the tonsillitis does aggravate his bowel, which that was when I was told in A&E that I was an overbearing mother and all children get poorly. That was at our local A&E. And up to now, we've had no more major poolies. And we have had the sickness bug twice. And I did take him to our actual GP practice. They are really good. They ring Newcastle and they say, this is what's happening. What do you want us to do? And they'll say, oh, this antibiotic, that antibiotic. Leave him for a few days and see what happens. Or whatever their plan is, the GP asks them and does what they say. And luckily, we've had no really bad, you know, enterocolitis or anything. Apart from the next big thing is what Tom said is potty training. Because boys hold it in. And that's really not good. So that's kind of my next big worry. But then I'm also kind of not worried because he's already telling me, oh, I need the toilet, or I've done a poo, or I'm doing a wee, which is really good for his age. Really, really good. I just don't want him to be like, oh, I'm scared of the toilet, let's hold that in. So, yeah, I think we're a good story out of so many bad. And I want to tell his story because I've been the frightened mum where I've thought, oh my God, at some point he's going to die because of this. And he's so poorly now. And are we ever going to get some happy days? And I wish I had somebody then that was me now to say, it's going to be okay. You know, there can be good out of it. You know, not every story is awful. And I feel heart sorry for people that are. But as a newly diagnosed, terrified child and mum, I wanted somebody that's me now to be like, well, look at Oakley. He's absolutely thriving. You know, yes, some things bother him, some foods bother him, but he is happy, he's not ill, and nobody would even know that there was anything wrong with him that doesn't know him.
No, I mean, what a story, first of all, so far. But and I really appreciate you coming on as well, because like you said, there will be people listening to this.
Yeah.
Or there will be people who listen to this in the future that have been in your position, you know, a month, 2 months, you know, down the line, and going, you know, what is next? You know, yeah. I mean, there's some parts of that story that you brought up where they're mentioning the term Hirschsprung's disease. They're saying washout. I mean, without knowing what Hirschsprung's is, without knowing what a washout is, how would you ever know? It's just, you know, and like you said, you know, they're going to wash my baby. Why are they washing my baby? You know, but that makes total sense, because why would you know what a washout is?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it's, but there'll be people listening to this that will be in that same situation, that will be thinking, oh, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. Yeah. And that tunnel seems so long. Like, it's never ending. And then all of a sudden, I've actually thought to myself, hang on, I need to stop thinking negatively. Look at him. Like when he was 6 months old and we were going on holiday, I was so terrified, thinking he's going to get poorly when we're away. What are we going to do? You know, and actually, nothing happened. And that's when I first started thinking, oh, we are actually okay. You know, he's okay. He's happy. Look at him flying around the pool with his brothers and sisters. And it's just, yeah, that was my kind of awakening of there's light at this t the I'm at the end of that tunnel now.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. And it is one of those conditions that I mean, it is a lifelong condition, but you know, there are many success stories out there of people who, you know, maybe have a few difficult early patches, but then I've interviewed plenty of people who are adults now who've, you know, had a difficult maybe first couple of months, but actually have gone on, you know, and are now in their 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever, and have no complications whatsoever. And that is more than possible.
That and I hope that for I hope that for all children with it, you know. But I feel like hearing a good story at such a young age, I'll give more parents that hope that yes, we're having a bad time at the minute, but it can be better, you know. And
Definitely.
the thing, I mean, the things that we've done for him since, like to us, that hospital is God, you know, it's everything. It saved us. We've done loads of fundraising, and it's just to give back. But how do you give back to people that saved your life and your son's life? You know,
Yes.
nothing to do ever feels enough. And we always say, you know, we worship the ground they walk on. But it's their everyday job.
Yeah,
And
they don't see it like that because it's their job. They don't, well, maybe they don't, maybe they do, maybe they don't, I don't know. But because I guess it's normal to them to save people's lives, to operate, to care for other people. It's still important, obviously, and they still recognize the importance of it, but maybe they're a lot more humble about it, I think.
I think like we were saying, I'm a dairy farmer by trade, you know, that's and I can do anything with a cow. But I come home and I don't, you know, I'm not like, oh, we had to do this on a cow today and it was really interesting because it's just our normal everyday life. But to us, like to somebody else that doesn't farm, they'd be like, oh my God, that is amazing, you know, and I feel like it's the same with all these surgeons in anything they do, but I feel like people that operate on children must be like, I saved them.
Yeah.
But then they still go home and they just sit and eat the tea and they're like, oh, I did three operations today. All right, did you? Yeah. It's just normal. But to us,
Yeah.
it's the world.
It is. But speaking of doing things for others and helping other people, you've also been involved in the Every Step campaign as well. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
So the Newcastle Hospitals charity, and it is all of the hospitals, so it's not just the RVI, it's the Freeman, Cramlington, I think, and it could be James Cook, but that isn't gospel truth off me because I'm not sure. Got in touch with us last May and asked if Oakley wanted to be part of the Every Step campaign. Would we go over, have his footprints taken, and they would be used as the promotion for it? And I was like, yep, you know, anything. So we went over for the day, and all my kids got to have the footprints taken. So there was Bailey, who's my oldest, Lacey and Alfie, who were Andrew's older two, and Oakley. And when they explained to us what it was, it meant so much to us because the whole campaign is every step of your journey from walking in to Newcastle Hospital, right through from your diagnosis, your treatment, your aftercare, right through, they are there every step of the way, no matter what. And that is exactly what we've experienced as a family. There's been times where, when we've been at home, I've had to ring up and ask what I think's a silly question, but it isn't. There was times on a night time where I was so upset in the room on my own after everybody had gone home, and the nurses would just come and sit and talk with us, explain everything. They took the time to get to know our family, our family's interests, what they did. Even when we were in there, all the nurses got Bailey and Lacey and Alfie to paint the ward windows for Christmas. And right from the moment we walked over that doorstep, they are there at any given moment. And that is exactly what the Every Step campaign stands for. And it's what they want every patient and every family to feel. And if they feel like we do, that is the campaign, down in a hole. And it is absolutely amazing how to just, and they never forget you either. Do you know, it's like, yes, we were in 19 months ago for a month, but if I need to ring the ward for something, or I rang up about his injections, for instance, because I didn't know whether I could just give him his next ones or I needed it confirmed. And it was my favourite nurse, Kim. And she's like, "Is that you, Megan? How's Auckland? I thought it was your voice." And I'm like, oh, they just remember you. And that is everything that Every Step represents. They want you to feel, looked after and put your trust in them through the whole thing. And it's amazing. And I can't believe that we got to do the promotion for it, but also experience it as well. And when we went and got the footprints taken, there was so many kids in that room that were also doing it, and they had so many different journeys. There was cancer patients, there was children with just disabilities that you, and we didn't really know what was wrong with them, but and it, everyone is just treat like royalty, and that I feel like that's how it should be.
Yeah, I mean that's brilliant, and it must. I mean, no matter what you're going through at the time, it must feel. Well, I know from my own personal experience how good it feels when people, they might not understand everything that you're going through, but they know who you are, and you're valued as a human being rather than just patient 3075.
Yes.
And that must be, well, I know myself that is worth a lot, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Like when we were in, both times that we had kind of a long stint, when we were leaving, the nurses on the ward were upset too. And they were like, "We've got to see him before we go. Like, please don't go until we've come and seen you." And it's like, it's not just like, "Right, need that room, you're out today." And that is everything, because you know that they have put their all into caring for your child, no matter what's wrong with them. It could be hurt. Like, there was on our ward, there were so many different things. Like, there was a little boy in that Bailey had made friends with, his aorta had burst. And it's like, wow, you get the, to us, that would be you get special treatment because that is huge. But we all get that special treatment in our own way, tailored to you and your family. And it's like everything, the whole thing, that right from going in to coming out and even going back for checkups now, everyone's like, "Oh, hiya, hiya." It's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. You're not, like you said, you're not just a number.
Yeah, and that's got to be worth a heck of a lot. I mean,
Yeah.
it's especially when you
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams
aren't your enemy.
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
When you're going through what can be quite an uncertain time, I mean, especially as we talked about right at the start, especially with it being a rare disease, you know, yeah. You said you've got lots of children on the ward. Chances are you've probably not got anybody else there with Hirschsprung's.
Yeah.
So it's, you can feel a little bit alone. So
yes.
To have somebody who, again, might not know everything you're going through, but at least they know you, they know Oakley, you know, they know what Oakley has, you know, at least you've got somebody there who's supporting you, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. When they were doing his washouts, and I was like, this is wild. What I liked was even your student nurse, right, to your ward sister, knew how to do that procedure, who needed that procedure, and what it entailed. There was no, oh, you'll have to wait because we don't have such and such. Everybody knew everything, at what time, and people would come in and be like, has Oakley had his washout? I've just been on my break, or, you know, everybody knew. And they explained to us, things like that are kind of their bread and butter on the ward, washouts, because you can get a washout for a lot of reasons, apparently, not just the Hirschsprung's. And stomas are it was our ward bread and butter, and that's what they said. So everybody knows how to do everything and when everybody needs it. And that kind of made you feel a bit better, but then you still didn't know who had what, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
But you knew that they knew what they were doing so they could tell you about it. And that made you, put me at ease and the rest of the family. And obviously you trusted them to do it.
Yeah. I mean, confidence as well is so important, to have confidence in people, because they're looking after, you know, the most precious thing in the world to you, your child, you know, so to have 100% confidence in the fact that, you know, they know what they're doing, they know when they're doing it, they're not running around going, oh, what's this happening, and oh, we need to get so-and-so and all of that, like you said, you know, and they're checking in on you as a person rather than just a patient as well, and they know what's going on. That's got to be, you've got, you know, so many things going on, like you said, through your head about not knowing, is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? There's all manner of techniques and phrases and terminology being thrown at you, like with everyone with Hirschsprung's. You've got to learn everything so fast. Things that you didn't even know existed 24 hours ago, suddenly you've got to know all of it, and very quickly.
And not difficult either. Where you're learning it from.
I mean, it's, but no, this has been brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on. Finally, I know you said that Oakley's doing really well now, which is great, which is so good to hear. In terms of sort of the future for him, what do you hope?
hope that he is well enough to, you know, not have accidents at school and stuff like that. But I hope he grows up and achieves anything and everything he wants to achieve. You know, I'm living proof a grade on a piece of paper doesn't define your future, because my grades at school were horrendous. And I have done 6 years at Agricultural University, passed it all with flying colours. I've got 20 years experience in it under my belt now, although I don't look a day over 21, obviously. And that's all I want for him, to be able to go ahead and he is really clever, whether it's academically clever, you know, working clever, whatever he chooses to do, I want him to grab it with both hands, because there was a day there where we couldn't even see his future. And the days that we're living now and for the rest of his life are everything we wished for in that moment when that nurse said to me, if he makes it off the ambulance.
Yeah, beautifully so put.
Anything he does, I'll be the proud mum. Like Hirschsprungs can't stop you.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That is wonderfully put, and a fantastic sentiment to finish on. And I wish Oakley, yourself, and the rest of your family all the very, very best for the future. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.